시간 to the road gets rougher, it's lonelier and tougher. With hope you'll burn up, tomorrow she may turn up. There's just no let up, the live long night.
First, we'll come to order. Will you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Now, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, there will be public forum for any subject which is not on tonight's agenda. I do not have any speaker slips.
We do have one, Mayor Pro Tem, but we do need to do roll call. Roll call.
Roll call. Please excuse me, if you would be so kind.
Councilmember Seves?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Perotti?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Easton?
Here.
Mayor Connell?
No speaker slips for public forum. You have one. Barbara Massey.
Barbara Massey, Goleta, you knew I couldn't resist. I know this is to present the information to us, but I think there's something you need to know, that a large number of people in the community don't want any change to the agricultural zoning. We voted and supported people for our general plan.
I would ask you to sit down. You are addressing the subject, which is the agenda for today.
But I was not told that there was no comment on the agenda.
Would the clerk read the next item into the record?
Item A1, dissemination of city report on the Bishop Ranch property and application summary materials.
Does the council have any declarations, site visits, ex parte communications?
I have none.
I've spoken with the applicant.
I have none.
I've had a site visit with an employee of the applicant and spoken briefly with the applicant. The context for this workshop is that Bishop Ranch 2000 LLC submitted an application to the city requesting a GPA, General Plan Amendment, for land use conversion and a development agreement. Staff and consultant are in the process of evaluating the application request and disseminating information about the property at the workshop tonight, and will be seeking public input at a workshop on August 18th. On September 20th, the City Council will host a public hearing to officially consider the applicant's request. I would ask that there not be any comment at this meeting. This isn't a meeting for you to receive information, for us to receive information, and for that matter, for the applicant to receive the same information, because none of us have been party to it up until this time. The workshop is about listening, as staff and consultant will present an overview of the research and analysis that they have conducted for the property. This workshop is not about evaluating a project. No decisions or actions will be made tonight. Please refrain from audience comments and turn off your cell phones. This workshop is televised and will be re-aired on Channel 19 and available for download on the city's website. At the end of the workshop tonight, staff will be distributing CDs of the report. The report will also be available for download off our website. Hard copies are available for viewing at City Hall and the library. This workshop is funded by the applicant. The applicant team is in the audience. Will City Attorney please explain to the council public comment delay to 8:18?
Yes. Because of the amount of information that is to be presented on the item, the intention is to, rather than have one item where the information is provided to you in a presentation, and then there's public comment, and then the council deliberates and makes a decision, we have decided to spread that one meeting out over three meetings into those three stages. The first stage being this evening, which is the providing the information and providing the presentation. The next meeting will be on August 18th, where it is the intent that the public and the council will have that month opportunity to review the large amount of information that is being provided in order to provide public comment and their own questions and considerations based upon that large amount of information and based upon having the opportunity to thoroughly review and form information and questions based upon the great amount of information that is provided. It will give an opportunity for more thoughtful, detailed, and specific questions. And then the third meeting on September 20th will be a council meeting. It will involve the council deliberations and decision on the application, which is initiation of a GPA and a development agreement. That said, at the end of the item tonight, you are not prohibited from providing comments. It is the request of the council that you refrain from doing so that you have a month to absorb the information and review the information as they will have as well, and to provide your public comments at the August 18th meeting. However, again, you are not prohibited from providing public comment.
And by the way, just because I didn't realize I didn't explain it earlier, I'm presiding tonight because the mayor is ill. And as Mayor Pro Tem, that is my obligation. I've been doing it an awful lot today. Are there any questions about the process? Hearing none, I'd like to introduce Mr. Steve Chase, who will kick off the presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the City Council. I'm going to do two things. First of all, I'm going to introduce the study team so that everyone in the audience is well apprised of who's been working on this project over the last 11 months. And then I'm going to provide some introductory remarks that will get us right into the heart of the matter for this evening. First off, our project manager for this particular endeavor has been Ann Wells. Ann is the planning manager of our advanced planning section. Many of you know her as, if you will, the architect of the city's general plan. With her at the dais tonight is Charles Smith and Nicole Williams. Many of you know Charles from the firm Jones and Stokes. Well, both Charles and Nicole are with what's now been renamed to ICF, Jones and Stokes. Charles and his team prepared the draft and final environmental impact reports for the city's general plan back in the 2005-2006 time period, and then worked with the City Council and the Planning Commission staff bring about further review of that general plan document and its CEQA analysis in the 2008-2009 timeframe. In terms of purpose, I came forward to the City Council with Ann approximately 11 months ago, and at that point in time, I indicated to the Council that staff and the city are duty-bound to address an application that we had received from Bishop Ranch 2000 Limited Liability Corporation. That application was for a general plan amendment as well as for a development agreement. We as staff indicated to the council what we wanted to engage in before we wrapped our arms around the project itself was to close, actually to validate some information. We wanted to close some data gaps. We wanted to understand how this particular piece of property behaves in its fallow sense or as agriculture, which is what it's designated for under zoning as well as the general plan, or under an urban suburban land use, if indeed an application were to go forward. We also wanted to answer some prevailing questions that the community has been asking with respect to this property, and in particular, questions that deal with its history, its ownership, water rights, its viability. What is the carrying capacity of this property as it relates to a variety of land uses? What's its carrying capacity as it relates to agriculture? What about urban suburban uses? Things of that nature. What we propose to the council is that we would not engage in a environmental analysis. Rather, what we would engage in is an examination of existing information and a validation of a number of questions using that existing information. In essence, what we have been engaged in over the last 11 months is a research study about a piece of property, albeit a fairly significant piece of property within this community. What we have not done, and I need to stress, what we have not done is an environmental analysis or a general plan conformity analysis or a zoning analysis about potential future uses of this property to be studied at a later date, if that is the desire of the City Council. Again, what we have done is looked at the behavior of this property. It's all been about the property. So this evening, the presentation that is going to come forward from Ms. Wells and from our colleagues with ICF Jones and Stokes is about the carrying capacity of this property. How does it behave in terms of a number of items I've identified, as well as other items, soil types, geology, cultural archaeology, things of that nature? All of this information has been compiled into a report. As the mayor indicated, you will have that report as you leave this particular forum. As the mayor indicated, and as the assistant city attorney indicated, we will also use this meeting to set in motion a couple of more meetings to come, one of them on August 18th, sort of part two. And at that point in time, we will dive into a concept plan that came in the door from the applicant associated with their application. It's a concept plan. On September 20th, that's the decision point that the City Council is faced with as to whether or not it chooses to engage in and open this up to a public planning process or stop it at that point in time. So we have information about the property tonight, information about a concept plan in August, a decision point on whether or not to engage in a full-blown public planning process in the September timeframe. In one sense, I want you to sit back, take this information in, spend the next 30 days or so reviewing the information that's provided in the report, get familiar with it, ask and actually prepare and then ask questions regarding the property. in the August timeframe, and also at that point in time, join with us to learn more about a concept plan. So with that, I'm going to pitch this to Ann Wells.
Thank you. We appreciate your time tonight and the public's time tonight. We're going to start you off tonight with a summary of the history of the property and the land use of the property and water rights. And then we'll kind of dive into the analysis and the methods and the study that our consultant team here has conducted. And then we'll end with a summary of the application materials. So Charles Smith is going to kind of give you a rundown of the first part, and then Nicole Williams with the second part, and I'll conclude the evening. So Charles, thank you.
Thank you. That was the slide. So both Steve and Joanne have pretty much articulated what this is and what this isn't tonight. This slide here kind of recaps some of that again, providing information to the city, preliminary research, evaluation and documentation, and identification of issues that may need further study. And again, this is not a study performed under CEQA, and it's certainly not an exhaustive evaluation of anything that may, you know, occur in, you know, issues that may ultimately result from the future of the property. Just some background on the location of the property. I think everyone here is probably familiar with this, but just to highlight it, it's approximately 240 acres. Located at 96 Glen Annie Road, bounded by US 101 to the south, Glen Annie to the west, and Los Carnos Creek to the east, and Cathedral Oaks Road to the north, and the property is currently vacant. As you look at surrounding land uses, it's really a mix of urban and agricultural lands. North of Cathedral Oaks Road are agricultural lands owned by the University Exchange Corporation, or UEC. You'll hear me refer to that throughout various points of the presentation tonight, and the Los Padres National Forest. Beyond US 101 and the Union Pacific Railroad and its existing business parks, Los Carnos Creek and agricultural property are immediately to the east, followed by Los Carnos Road residences and open space. And Glen Annie Road is to the west, and adjacent to that are residences, some abandoned agriculture, and Dos Pueblos High School. I wanted to talk next about the history of the property, land use, water, and agriculture, and we'll kind of take those topics here in turn. There's a lot of details that could be talked about, so in most cases I'll just kind of hit the high points and move that along. Property has a long history, dating back to the mid to early 1840s, used for cattle ranching, and as you can see throughout those various decades in the 1800s, there were various changes in ownership associated with the broader Bishop Ranch location, to include specifically the 240-acre property that we're discussing tonight. Moving on into the 1950s, the property was ultimately sold to UEC. They are the current owner. And then you can see, as you look through the 1970s and 80s, different types of uses that occurred on the site: active farming, some cattle grazing, some agriculture. And then in 1999, of course, Bishop Ranch 2000 LLC acquired their interest to purchase the property. But again, it's currently owned by UEC. We've talked about where the site is located, and as we look at existing land use and zoning designations, it's located outside the coastal zone. It has changed over time. If you go back to the 1950s, county had it zoned as highway residential and highway commercial. It was rezoned as single family and then designated as residential in the 1960s. There were some residential lots classified in 1984, and then, of course, Santa Barbara County Community Plan in 1993 designated it as Urban Ag A1, and with a note that in 2003 they would reassess that designation. Upon incorporation of the city of Goleta, the city adopted the county zoning at that time. And the 2006 city general plan adoption, the land use designation of agriculture. So right now the existing land use is agriculture and the existing zoning is AG-I-40. I'm going to have a drink of water and then we'll talk about water. As we all know in California, water and water rights, a very complex topic. So again, just going to kind of hit the high points here on some of the ways that that has played into the property over the years. We talked earlier about the various ownership that has occurred too throughout the years. But anyway, if we start the story, at least for purposes of water in the 1950s, you can see a dispute related to water rights there between the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and the Bishop Ranch Company. There was a settlement. Kachuma exchange agreement for 100 acre feet per year, or AFY, of water for the ranch. That was transferred to UEC in 1957. And then there were some other activities there related to other local owners, Gershon Weston. There was a settlement in 1986. Some related matters, of course, reservoirs constructed on the property to hold water, in a pumpage reduction agreement in 1991. Ultimately, as we get to kind of what the big takeaways are here, the UEC Ranch Management gave up rights to water service from the Goleta Water District in 1993. 250 acre feet per year provided, but were not to be used on the upper ranch, which is the part north of Cathedral Oaks Road. If we get a little closer to today's date, you'll see that the 250 acre foot per year right was transferred to UCSB, and then 50 AFY was transferred back in 1996. And so when you think about today and what the water right is today on the property, the 240 acre property, it's 50 acre feet per year. That allocation is provided by the Goleta Water District. I want to turn our attention to agricultural use. As you can imagine, ag use is affected by principally topography, soil, water. And if you look on site, the topography does vary. You have about 30 acres where the slopes are greater than 15%, and about 20 acres where they're greater than 20%. Generally what happens is when you have slopes, cultivated areas and slopes where they exceed 20%, then of course you're going to have a higher rate of erosion and runoff. So that's just something to think about. A couple of acronyms there at the bottom, the Natural Resource Conservation Service and the Department of Conservation have different ways that they designate soils. And so this next slide you'll see, and it's kind of hard to read here, but basically if you look at the different classes of soils that those agencies have identified. We've kind of shown there how many acres fall into each one of those classes. The site's 240 acres. 200 of those acres do have the potential to qualify as prime farmland, but I want to add that only 12 of the acres have the ability to be prime farmland if they're either irrigated or non-irrigated. And the rest of the designations actually require the soil to be irrigated, because it's not as simple as a thing as you might imagine there, because it does play into whether or not irrigation is available on site. And that's just a map, kind of indicating. It's again a little difficult at this scale to see, but looking at the Class 1, Class 2, and Class 3 designations from the table on the previous page kind of shows you how those fall out onto the site there. So typically, irrigated truck crops or orchards require about 2 acre feet per year per acre to irrigate. So we can do a little bit of math here and think, okay, well, if we apply that, if you had 200 acres, you'd need about 400 AFY per year of water to irrigate that. That's, and what they have, remember, is a 50 AFY water right. So what that equates to, assuming the 2 acre foot, gets you 25 acres of agriculture that could be placed there. And again, without irrigation water, you run into a situation where there's pretty low suitability for agricultural uses. In addition, because of the location and the climate here, you really can't do dry land farming. You know, it's different in other climates where you're able to do that kind of thing. So just a couple more notes on water, you know, as we think about availability and issues that relate to that. Again, recalling that site has a 50 acre foot per year right from Goleta Water District. We know the area is highlighted by competing demands for water. There's also a safe water supply ordinance that requires 1% of potable water supplies be used as a basis for allocating water to new or expanded service. Well, I won't get into the details there, but that in addition to hookup fees, just things to think about as you look at the implications for the future of the site. And a final note, you know, we've looked at the land use, the water, and now the agriculture is the grazing piece. We did some research with the Santa Barbara County Cattlemen's Association, and typically when they think about grazing, you think of something that can support anywhere from 25 to 230 animals per year. The analysis from one of our sub-consultants indicated the site would really support forage for animals, about total of about 19 animals. In addition, the current zoning doesn't permit commercial livestock feed or sale yards. So that is a brief recap on those items. As Ann indicated, Nicole's gonna walk you through some of the methodology and approach that we took in compiling the report. So I'll turn it over to you.
Good evening. Okay, so we prepared a four-step methodology. To sort of evaluate the property and different opportunities and
construction. I can't hear you.
Better?
Yeah.
Okay. We used a four-step methodology to evaluate the different types of opportunities and constraints on the property. The first step, we describe environmental conditions of the property, city, and region within the context of 13 different resources. We also describe services based on public service needs of the city and or service areas. And then we also described applicable regulatory and permit requirements. So that was the first step, just describing all that information. Step two involved identifying possible opportunities and constraints within three issue areas for three land use scenarios. So our three issue areas were the existing property, the three land use scenarios were existing property, urban and suburban use, or active agricultural use. We used multiple evaluation topics based on the Goleta Environmental Thresholds Guidelines Manual and the CEQA thresholds. So, for example, the resource geology and geologic hazards, they suggest looking at faults and liquefaction, and so that was one of the evaluation topics we took a look at. Some of the resources were primarily looked at through the property lens because they were very specific to the property, such as cultural resources or biological resources. Other resources were looked at a broader lens using the city or the region, such as air quality or public services. In step three, we applied a qualitative rating to these different opportunities and constraints to sort of help define them a little bit. So positive indicated an opportunity. Neutral indicated something that may not be either a constraint or an opportunity, and then negative indicated a constraint. Now, this wasn't meant to completely eliminate or completely support one thing over another. It was just meant to provide some context and to identify issues that if they were negative, they might need either some regulatory mechanism or a design feature or something like that to overcome it. And then step four, we qualitatively summarized all of this information for you in various forms. So an example of this methodology is we took a look at the resource aesthetics in the environmental issue area, and we identified that the views to and from the property are generally considered high quality, and that is the property currently supports aesthetics views, so that was given a positive. This is an opportunity. Active agricultural uses would alter existing views, but they would generally maintain the views and they would complement surrounding agricultural uses, so it was generally a neutral. Urban uses might substantially alter the existing views to and from the property, so we gave that a negative. This might constrain the property for an urban use. The 13 resources we looked at included aesthetics, agriculture, air quality, biological resources, demographics, geology hazards, public facilities, noise, water supply and utilities, transportation, and traffic. So now I'm going to walk through just a few of the existing environmental considerations that we found for these different resources, just to give you a flavor of sort of what's out there on the property. So right now, the property consists of vacant land that is has gently rolling topography, and it affords views of the Pacific Ocean and Santa Ynez Mountains. It generally has high quality views. There are public vantage points around the city that include public streets like the US 101, as well as public open space that can view this property. Then I'm going to move on to air quality. Right now, because the property is vacant, it doesn't produce any emissions. However, the county is currently in non-attainment for ozone and PM10. The property is adjacent to some sensitive receptors. If you recall the map that Charles showed earlier, there are a few sensitive receptors to the west and also on the other side of the creek. So that's something to take into consider when you look at air quality. Biological resources on the property actually provide a wide variety of different types of vegetation. However, the primary vegetation on the property is about 200 acres of non-native grasslands. There are two drainage features on the property. They're unnamed, and adjacent to the property is Los Carneros Creek and Glen Annie Creek. In addition to the different vegetation, there are raptor nests and butterfly aggregation overwintering sites, including adjacent buffers as protected by the general plan as ESHAs. And then we also, in our document, we identified potentially sensitive habitat areas on the property. There's a map that identifies those. So they may not exactly be identified as ESHAs within the general plan, but they might have the potential to, provided the correct surveys and studies are done. Okay. Moving on to cultural, we found out that there are 5 prehistoric sites on the property that have been documented over the years. There is one historic resource on the property, and that is the Bishop Ranch House. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about this. It's been documented before as having historical significance, specifically representing the agricultural headquarters in the Goleta area. It is identified as a place of historic merit. The minutes of the March 14th, 1994 meeting of the Santa Barbara County Historic Landmarks Advisory Commission evaluated the idea to designate it as a landmark, but that action was never taken. However, it appears that they did document it as a place of historic merit. Now, just because it's a place of historic merit does not mean it is necessarily protected. Because it's not a landmark, it does not, you could still tear it down. However, because of its age and its association with the ranch, it does have some historical significance. We took a look at demographics and housing, which is also described in the report. Both existing demographics, housing, and land use, and future projections. We used quite a few different resources to do that. So just a few notes here. Everyone generally understands that housing costs are fairly high in the area. The traditional standard for determining housing affordability is when housing costs do not exceed 30% of the income of a household. And here, there are between 53 and 59% of owners and renters, they spend more than 30%. So it is fairly high. The jobs housing ratio currently is above 1.5%. Sorry, 1.5. Anything above 1.5 generally indicates there is a jobs housing imbalance. And so that basically there is insufficient supply of housing to meet the needs of the workforce. And SB CAG does predict this slight imbalance to occur in the future. As a result of SB CAG's RENA process completed in August of 2008, the city was allocated approximately 1,600 units for the 2007-2014 planning period. The production of housing that has come onto the market in the approved projects during this time has nearly met all of the city's needs for housing. So the city's needs will be met within the planning period up to 2014 for RENA purposes. Moving on to geology and soils. The property has moderately high erodible soils. These range from Goleta fine sand and loam to Diablo clay deposits. There are faults in the vicinity. The property is located roughly 2,000 feet south of the Glen Annie Fault. Other fault zones in the area include the Moore Ranch Fault to the south and the Carneros Fault to the north. There are different soils on the property. In the report, we've mapped compressible soils, collapsible soils, and expansive soils, as well as different types of geologic formations. Moving on to hazardous materials and hazards, we performed a hazardous material search, document search, and we turned up no documented hazardous material sites or hazardous material waste sites on the property. As we all know, it was formerly used as agricultural use, which probably applied pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers, but no soil testing or groundwater testing was done as part of this study. It is located about half a mile from the airport. This is a hazards issue, although not a hazardous materials issue. It is a hazard, or could be a hazard. But since it's located outside safety zone 3 of the airport, it's just a point to note. A Ooh, that's hard to see as well. So surface water and hydrology, I already mentioned that the property is adjacent to Los Carneros Creek, and then across from Glen Annie Road is Glen Annie Creek, and it winds down along there, along the 101. Both of these creeks have been designated through the California, the Clean Water Act as 303D impaired. They are impaired for different constituents such as salinity, pathogens, and the like. There are two drainage features on the property. They're designated on the map there. One is just to the east of the location of the ranch house. The other one is to the east central part of the property. Both of these drain directly into Glen Annie Creek. The property is almost 100% pervious surfaces, which means that essentially there's no concrete or pavement on it. Since the property is vacant, there is no noise generating sources. It is adjacent to sensitive receptors such as residents. It is outside the airport noise contours. However, the railroad and US 101 are nearby, so it may be subject to vibration from these types of uses. Moving on to public services. This is supposed to identify all of the locations of the different public services and facilities in the city. Essentially, the property does not currently generate a demand for public services. So fire, but looking within the context of the city, we tried to identify where public services or public facilities may or may not be deficient and to document that. So we discovered that currently fire services are not met. They are currently deficient. When we did our initial research, police services did meet their service ratio. However, since that time, we found out that there have been recent budget cutbacks, and so that may affect the ability of the service of the police. Libraries are currently experiencing a deficiency, and they will probably likely to do so in the future. The school's enrollments are relatively steady, and there is actually some available capacity. Parks and recreation. The city has an abundance of passive parks and open space, and they are deficient in active parks. Moving on to utilities, this figure shows the different utilities boundaries and where the property is located. It is located in the Goleta Water District service area. It is located just outside of the Goleta West Sanitation District service area and is actually not served with wastewater service. Currently, there's a septic tank on the property and is not connected to wastewater service. It is connected to the Goleta Water District. They have provided minimal amounts of water over the past years to the property for landscaping purposes. The sanitation districts are currently able to meet the needs, and they are preparing to upgrade their system and also get ability to increase their capacity through their National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. So the sanitation districts have sufficient wastewater capacity. The Goleta Water District, at the time when we first did the research, they were updating a number of their studies, including their urban water management plan and their water water supply management plan. The urban water management plan is still being updated, which will take information from the water supply management plan about supply and demand and identify deficiencies. Additionally, as Charles mentioned earlier, the SAFE ordinance is something that Goleta Water District uses to manage their water within the service area. The property does not generate any vehicle trips. The city has adopted an LOSC on all roads except Stork Hollister, which has a standard of D. There are 10 intersections adjacent to the property that are operating within their LOS. 4 intersections are operating at LOSC. Those are Cathedral Oaks Road, Los Carneros Road, Calle Real Road, Los Carneros Road, the US 101 SB Ramp, and Los Carneros Road and the Calle Corral Road. Okay, so after all of that, what does this actually mean? So the property in its vacant condition represents a very low threshold for any type of either active agricultural use, future use, or urban use. And by that I mean really any change to future use is going to result in either resource alterations or changes in public service demands. So, for example, if you take a look at maybe an active agricultural scenario, that active agricultural scenario would likely use the historic topography on the that has been previously used to operate ag on the land. So that's the 200 acres of generally non-native grassland. So if you applied that to this property, you would generally preserve the existing cultural resources that we've identified that are located on the property. Or if you took the urban scenario and developed housing on the property, you might provide needed housing. And these two outcomes, depending on which scenario you took, active ag to preserve cultural resources or urban to provide needed housing, they would be considered opportunities. However, if you took a look at your active ag use for, say, something as hazards, and you would be using new pesticides and herbicides on this property that hasn't been used in that way in a while, that would be considered a constraint. Alternatively, urban uses increase growth and related demands, and that would be considered a constraint. So now I'd like to just walk through a few examples for you, and more information is in the report about this. But essentially, I'd like to talk about our environmental issue area. So that's primarily concerned with the physical environment of the property. And we're going to take just a look at the existing land use. So right now it's vacant land that's generally non-open to the public. So under the existing vacant scenario, we identified topics that generally resulted in positive ratings for the resources noted up there. And these resources generally supported, rather, the property generally supported these resources. So just to put some context in this, there are no sensitive receptors to air quality emissions on the property, and it does not produce any odors. So that would be considered a positive thing about the vacant property. It provides and supports aesthetic views. It supports different biological habitats. It has a historic resource and contains 5 prehistoric sites. It has no known hazardous material sites. It does not use, dispose of, or store hazardous materials. It's compatible with the existing noise environment, and it generates either no demand or very minimal demand on water supply, wastewater, and utilities. We have a few neutral issues up there, and they tend to reflect known issues within the region or adjacent areas. So the fact that the property doesn't generate emissions is a good thing. But the current basin, since it's in non-attainment for two criteria pollutants, that sort of brings that good thing down a little bit. So that's kind of a neutral issue. In addition, the property in its vacant status wouldn't be affected by, say, an earthquake, but it is close to known fault lines. So then the next slide shows this same sort of idea applied to an active agricultural use, where we've got a few opportunities, a few neutral ratings, and a few negative ratings. So just to walk through a few of these and give you an idea of the thought process behind them. For positive ratings, the property would likely not completely remove the cultural resources that are there if active agriculture occurred. There are currently no hazardous material sites on it, and active agriculture would be compatible with the airport, which is in close proximity. The property received neutral ratings because when compared to the existing vacant land use conditions, these resources would be somewhat modified or altered. For example, active ag would probably follow the historic topography of the previous ag, so it would likely maintain similar views in the area, and it might also maintain most of the potentially sensitive biological habitat out there. And it would likely have a similar stormwater generation because it would generally maintain the pervious nature of the site. There were a few topics that resulted in constraints, and they typically resulted in constraints because we have active agriculture that involves some type of ground disturbing activities, which can result in loss of foraging habitat. Agricultural runoff could occur and could be collected by the impaired water resources adjacent to the property. And as mentioned before, it would likely use hazardous materials. So I just want to point one other thing out about this before moving to the next chart. You're seeing multiple indicators in there multiple X's in there, because we looked at a wide variety of evaluation topics. So while we looked at the resource geology, under geology we looked at faults, soils, earthquakes, all kinds of things. So an evaluation topic could have come up negative under geology for, say, earthquakes, but it also could have come up positive for, say, lack of compressible soils. So that's why we're seeing multiple things. It gives you sort of a spread of how these resources work together. Okay. Then our last chart takes a look at our environmental issue area under an urban use. So there are a few positive ratings here. Always coming back to the no known hazardous materials, that's a good standby. Furthermore, we also did note a positive in demographics and housing because it would provide additional housing. There are a few neutral ratings in here. For example, these resource areas identified would not generally constrain the property. The property has moderately erodible soils, as noted earlier, and if you put an urban use on this property, ultimately the soils would no longer erode because they would be covered up with pavement. So that's sort of a neutral thought. Probably negative on the stormwater generation, though, in hydrology. So the other negatives, or rather neutrals. Because the property is adjacent to 101 and the rail, and the 101 and the rail lines can generally transport hazardous materials. We gave it a neutral because there could be, slight exposure depending on your urban use to hazardous materials, transport, spills, that type of thing. Under the urban land use scenario, we identified a few negative or constraints for the property. Those include things like aesthetics, agriculture, air quality, biology, cultural, demographics. Generally, as earlier noted, an urban use on this property would substantially alter the views of and to the property. It would certainly increase the demand on certain public services and utilities, and it would certainly put a different, it would certainly modify the RENA numbers in the future. And so absent a substantial 20 housing units per acre zoning, the production of affordable housing might likely be a constraint if urban uses were included on this property. So essentially, the study that was prepared does this type of exercise for the environmental issue area. It does it for a regulatory and permitting issue area, and it also does it for a services area. And we looked at the three land use scenarios, the existing property, the possibility of active agriculture, or the possibility of an urban use, and prepared these types of different constraints and opportunities and the ratings. And I think that concludes my part of the presentation.
Thank you, Nicole. Before I jump into my slides, which is a summary of the application materials, I just wanted to kind of review back just a little story I have about ICF. They were our general plan consultant team. And so they have a very detailed understanding of the resources here in Goleta and the region. And the specialists that they have are still the same specialists. So it made the consultant team they were already very educated on the subject. So they were a very good neutral third party preparing a detailed report. So what you heard tonight was a lot of information. And so you can take home the report or download it, and that will really help guide you back in because it's just a lot of information to take in. And the report's hot off the press. So so it's, like previously stated by the Mayor Pro Tem, it's new to all of us. And I also wanted to highlight that the research that went into the property was, that part's new for ICF Jones and Stokes and for us. They did site visits, they interviewed other agencies, they did new cultural records searches, they pulled the title report and did an analysis of that. They pulled minutes from different county agencies or commissions. They looked at air photos, other old documents. So there was a lot of validation of information and inspection. They did their own agriculture study, and that was conducted by Oren Sage. If you don't know Sage and Associates, they're expert in the field of agriculture viability studies. And the team that ICF put together, they were very conscientious about who they selected and the people that they interviewed. just to make sure that they were very neutral and disconnected with the previous studies on Bishop Ranch or the applicant's team, just to really maintain that neutrality. And I was able to go on a site visit with a consultant team, and there were a large number of us, and they brought their team, so the specialists from the individual resource areas that you can see up on that table were there, so they got a firsthand look, and we walked pretty much the entire property. And I thought I might share with you some of the takeaways that I had from listening tonight, from reading sections of the report that have been generated over the last number of months. And just a few things. One is the water rights story. I think over the years I've heard so many different stories. I've read different things in the Goleta Goodland book and different things I've read in the newspaper. And really after seeing the actual resolutions and agreements that are really old, some of them are very old, really, you know, knowing that there's those four water sources. There's the original Kachuma water source, there's the off-site wells, the marsh well, there's the on-site well, and then there's the Goleta Water District water that they have today. Kind of the takeaway when I distilled it all down was that Kachuma water that they had originally had, which they no longer have today, was eliminated because of lawsuits that were completely unrelated to today's circumstances. And that was a lot of work that ICF did to investigate and validate that. And then looking at both the off-site wells and the on-site wells at the water quality and the water production, and looking at those agreements and then finding that indeed they were of low quality and low production, with really high dissolved solids. And so that was, I thought that was interesting to really to go into that into more detail and to see that validated. And then the water district water today, which is just fascinating to try to follow the story. And I think when you get the report, you can read it a little bit more detail and get a better understanding of it. But just starting back with that 250 acre feet of water and how it passed hands, and it went from the water district to the UEC and then to UCSB, and, you know, it was like this hot tamale. And a lot of the hot tamale syndrome was because of the drought in the late 80s and the 90s. And that's where the water district was really pushing people who were not using their water to take the water back. And that was where, that at the end of the day, that 250 acre feet went from the landowner back to the water district, and there was all these trades, and they ended up with the 50 acre feet. But just seeing that and the evidence of that was really fascinating for me. And then the other kind of takeaway that I had was that the agriculture. And I learned a lot just because of the site visit I went on with Orrin Sage, and you know, fascinating to see a specialist at work, and then to see, as you will in the report, the way he did his methodology, and the way he looked at the property with water, without water, with cattle, despite the fact that a rezone would have to occur if they were to graze it. But I'll let you read the ag viability study, and I think you can, you know, you can do ag viability analyses a lot of different ways, but the bottom line is, for here you really need water, and I think Charles had already mentioned that the way Orrin Sage calculated out the water with 50 acre feet per year of water would equivalate to, I think I just made a word up, 25 acres of agriculture. And so there's a story there, and that doesn't mean that you couldn't have agriculture. It just means that you'd have to be more creative. And then the third takeaway I had was the ranch house and the research on the ranch house, because I think there's a lot of different I've heard a lot of different claims about the ranch house. But when ICF pulled the minutes from the Landmarks Advisory Commission, the counties. It was again not so crystal clear. There were motions made, and the landowner at the time did not want the house to be a landmark, and so in the minutes it basically they just made it a place of historic merit, and then asked that that the issue be revisited as to whether or not it could be basically bumped up to a landmark status. But clearly that ranch house is pretty special, and it's very unique. It was the hub of the Goleta Valley in the 1800s. I mean, it had burned down, so they rebuilt it, I think, in 1912. But it was the house prior to that and that house were just this fascinating place. You know, Hollister, I think Hollister lived there. And that's Hollister Ranch. So it's just a pretty unique ranch house. And so the bottom line was that after listening to everybody talk this tonight about going on site visits, there was nothing really super profound that I learned that I didn't already know or suspect, except that that I got a different kind of attachment to the property because of just understanding the history is just amazing. It's still there. That same place is still there that was passed around in the 1800s and 1900s and then still today. So with that, my little takeaway, you can stew on that, and then as you read the report, have your own, and we can talk about it in August. And that will be a very worthwhile dialogue. I'm just going to now kind of jump into here we go. If I can keep your attention just for a little while longer, and I'm going to kind of look this way because I can't talk like this. What's the applicant seeking? And I think that we just have to go back to that because it's easy to jump ahead because there's just a lot of emotion around the Bishop Ranch property, and that's not new. It always has been if you go back and look at the history. They're asking for the initiation of a general plan amendment for a land use conversion, and there's three components to that. There's a change in the land use plan map from an agriculture designation to an urban type land use designation, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. And then also two policy changes, one in the conservation element and another one in the open space element. And that would allow for agriculture designations to be converted into other land use types under certain circumstances. And both of these initiations require, or both of these actions would require City Council to initiate before we could proceed with the types of analysis that would get us like an environmental impact report and policy consistency analysis. So we're just not even there yet.
And what's the future here? What's the future here in terms of presentation? Because people have been sitting very quietly, very still, and a small break might let people stand up and get a little circulation going and stay awake a little further. Would that make any sense?
We could do that. I am very close to being done.
And will that finish? What?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then let's go for it and be done.
So what's on the screen is a concept plan map that was provided in the application. And you'll have a copy of it when you walk out tonight with some statistics on the back of it. And it's an example of an option for consideration and study if the general plan amendment request is initiated. And it's there's a little over 1,000 residential units in this option. They actually presented a few different options. Some neighborhood serving commercial and some park and open space and community use. So a little bit about the process. Because the kind of the vision of that concept map and the large number of units and the square footage of commercial, it sort of triggered the need for this study that ICF conducted. And so we're essentially evaluating the request via the consultant report that you'll get tonight. And so we're disseminating that information in two workshops, as we said, and then the council will consider that request at a hearing on September 20th. And again, if it's initiated, then we'll conduct that public planning process of evaluating the policy and environmental. So just a couple more slides. The study is available in hard copy here at City Hall. Also at the library, so you can come and view it here. You'll be getting your CD tonight. It's downloadable probably right now. You can watch this workshop on re-aired on Channel 19. You can watch it on our website through our Granicus program. And you're invited to come back. August 18th, we'll have a dialogue. There'll be stations so that you can get more information. We'll have question and answers. So that will be, I think, a really useful tool. You can submit your comments, please. We'll take comment up to September 20th, or the sooner you get it in, the quicker staff can get it to the council, distribute it, and the council could consider it. We keep our public comment, we log them, and we'll continue to do that through September 20th. Our log is in the foyer, and you can take copies of public comment that we received. And if you didn't know this already, if you sent me a letter, or if you sent the city manager a letter, or one council member, or all of them, we're logging them all, and we're distributing to so that our city council has a complete set of the comments. And if you have any questions, give us a call. We're here for you. We'll do our best to answer all of your questions. And again, we very much appreciate your time and patience sitting with us tonight. So thank you.
Thank you very much. If I could have a motion to continue this hearing.
Actually, we do have an opportunity for public comment. Again, you're not prohibited from providing public comment, and if we would need to take a break to allow us to stand up and move around, I'm not sure. Again, the city does request that you refrain from making public comment until you have an opportunity to review the information that is being provided to you today and provide your comments and make your public comments at the August 18th meeting workshop. Again, your public comments can be provided throughout all the way through September 20th and all the way to the end of the public hearing on September 20th. So you have all the opportunity that we can possibly provide you to provide public comment. So again, this would be the opportunity if you want to do so. We are requesting that you wait until the 18th. And please let the city clerk be aware if you're going to provide public comment.
Is there anyone want to take advantage of that opportunity now? See, I have one hand.
Just one question, if I may. Just a question while we have the consultants here. When you had the slide up about the public services, You're saying public services includes water supply, wastewater and utilities, transportation and circulation. Another very important public service that the city provides to its residents is public safety. First responders, police, fire, emergency medical. And that consumes a very large portion of the city's budget, and it's expected that that's going to increase as we go out in time, particularly the contract for police services. So is that something else that could be factored into the evaluation? Or, thanks.
So we did,
maybe I didn't capture it on the slide, but we sort of broke up because they're very large topics. So we had public services and facilities, which generally include fire, fire, police, libraries, schools, and parks. And then we had water supply, wastewater, and utilities. And utilities also included things like stormwater and solid waste. We did talk about sort of emergency management in kind of a funny spot. It's in hazards because emergency responders generally also respond to hazards. So that's also sort of addressed in the hazards area. So I think we might have covered it, but if you look through the report and find it lacking, let us know.
Mr. Wignow, would you provide the city clerk with your slip name and address? Thank you. Anyone else? Then to conclude this hearing, if I could get a motion to continue it until the August meeting from council. Mr. Ben?
I'll make a motion to continue the hearing to August the 18th.
Thank you very much. And I have a second. Any comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is continued and adjourned.